I went to the therapist for a little while, and I'm trying to focus on kind of like being with myself, if that makes any sense. Like growing up in a very technological era, it's really easy to like exist without really existing and being aware of yourself at the same time, and just sitting with yourself and letting you just feel and think the way that you want. And I can just shove information and media and conversations down my brain and never have to really like sit and just be, if that makes any sense. And I
Yes.
think it's really difficult. Like I think it's really difficult for a lot of people in my generation. And I'm trying my best to just start to do that. It's especially difficult moving to a new place like college and stuff, because like you want to hang out with a bunch of people, and then you don't want to necessarily sit and decompress and think about all the stuff that's going on in case it, triggers some sort of like panicky situation. But I think it's important, and I'm trying to work on it more.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our environmental prevention strategies in the community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jama@laytonville.org. You Speaks Out is produced and distributed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can also find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming and downloadable audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this radio station. They are the views of those who express them. Youth Speaks Out is free to rebroadcast upon notification. Our shows are posted monthly at our website, youthspeaksout.net, and you can find our podcast link there. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to K-Boo tonight at 8 o'clock for Squirrel Snow, the one show where we broadcast galactic awareness and animal awareness, where sometimes we have fascinating conversations with experts, authors, activists, and the fields of animal awareness and galactic awareness. And a lot of the time we play amazing music that could effectively raise your frequency of consciousness. Yes, that is Squirrel Snow. Tonight at 8 o'clock, here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He be telling y'all his name is Ramses Ja. It's a stage name. They do call me Q Ward, though. That's my actual first initial, my actual last name. Ramses Ja, stage name.
Thank you for that.
The people need to know, man. I'm in the presence of a celebrity over here.
Oh, man. I love it. We have another show for you. This one is a little interesting. Got a little fire under it. I'm anxious to get into this one, you know.
I love it when you describe the show. You really set a stage that has a little inkling that it might be all right by the end.
It might be all right. So listen,
oh, man,
stick around, because this episode we're going to talk about a few things. Unless you've
been under a rock, you have heard about our countrymen on the right who had sent migrants to various parts of the country, DC, Martha's Vineyard, etc., performing a political stunt. So obviously we need to weigh in on that. So we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to talk about somebody who we never thought we'd end up talking about on this show, but for some reason this guy just came out of left field with some strange stuff.
Not quite out of left field.
I mean, he's been kind of moving in that direction.
We'll speak on it. He's been trending that way for years.
For a while, yeah. But we're talking about Bill Maher. He had a lot to say about slavery, and he's trying to, we'll say, remove some of the responsibility of the legacy of slavery from this country's narrative. And so we're definitely going to peel back those layers. You knew you were going to get right here on Civic Cypher, so stay tuned for that and more. But first and foremost, we are going to discuss some Ebony Excellence. How do you feel?
Shall we?
We shall. So this week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Major Threads, where high fashion meets timeless menswear. Check out majorthreads.com. The story comes via Black Enterprise. 19, count them, 19 HBCU schools are Fulbright institutional leaders. All right, here we go. The U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs has recognized 19 historically Black colleges and universities. That's what HBCU stands for. As Fulbright historically Black college and university institutional leaders. The recognition is based on the strong partnerships between the Fulbright program and the HBCUs between the 2020 and 2022 academic years. And the 19 HBCU schools span across 13 states. The Fulbright program is the premier student exchange program for the U.S. government and has teamed with a many distinguished diversity-related groups, colleges, and universities. Quote, this is an exceptional note of distinction, unquote. This comes via Tuskegee President Charlotte P. Morris, who goes on to say, we have always known the caliber of students and faculty whose vigorous academic work influences our society in a variety of areas. This acknowledgement will help our students and the broader community see the enormous value our university brings. So big shout out to all 19 of the HBCUs. That obviously is Ebony Excellence, and Maggie B. Noen was not going to let us get this week off.
She do.
She wasn't going to let us get this week off without mentioning that. And so we dedicated the whole Ebony Excellence to it because, you know, that's what we're here to do. So again, shout out to all those schools for blazing the trail for future Ebony Excellence. Now, I have to assume that you've been under a rock, you know. So I'm going to paint a picture for you and read a little bit of a story. This comes by Yahoo News. Tucker Carlson goes on racist rant to celebrate migrants and their relocation to Martha's Vineyard. The story goes, Tucker Carlson went on a racist rant while celebrating what he called the, quote, happy story of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis sending two immigrant-filled planes to Martha's Vineyard this week. As the sun was rising in Washington, D.C. on Thursday morning, two buses carrying about 100 migrants from Del Rio, Texas, arrived outside Vice President Kamala Harris's residence at the Naval Observatory in the city's northwest quadrant. It was the latest political stunt by Republicans to protest President Joe Biden's immigration policies by sending waves of migrants to far-flung U.S. locations chosen to maximize political impact and conservative glee. Only 24 hours earlier, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis sent two private planes with about 50 migrants from Venezuela and Colombia to Martha's Vineyard Airport on Wednesday afternoon with no warning to local officials. So that's the story. You want to go first?
I want to talk about these things being criminal, but I'd rather just talk about them being inhumane
and cruel
and just mean. Mm-hmm. Like, Once upon a time, and I don't have to go, you know, back prior to us being born. When I was in college, September 11th, 2001, I was in the bookstore at Bowling Green State University with some of my teammates picking up our books, and all of a sudden all of the TVs tuned to what was going on at the towers in New York. And all of us, no matter who we voted for, no matter what our political stance, no matter what our socioeconomic background, no matter our race, religion, creed, sexual orientation, gender, no matter any of that stuff, we all not only stood in awe, but in very, very short order stood in solidarity. No matter who we thought failed leading up to that, no matter the number of conspiracy theories that were produced after that, no matter what our actual stance on how it happened, what happened, and all of that stuff, whether you supported Bill Clinton or George Bush or Al Gore or whatever, in that moment, a lot of people died. And our country was under attack externally. And maybe the only moment in my lifetime, there were not just some things that we could agree on, but there was a monumental singularity in how our country responded to what transpired on September 11th. What we've witnessed in the last 5-6 years has, in my lifetime, been the most damning, partisan, divisive, hate-filled politicians used to attempt to get bipartisan support on things. Because even though our political ideals differ, there have always been certain things that the country was united on. And we have very, very clearly reached a point where that is no longer true.
Yeah. The realities are different even.
Yeah, what we all consider to be facts aren't even the same. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to you, you know, when the mics were not recording about, you know, do I raise my children here? If you've not heard the show before, Ramses and I both have mixed children. And being a minority in this country has always been challenging, but currently being Black and Hispanic,
that's wow, a combination.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that there are not just people who are celebrating this, but making so light of it that they think it's funny to do this to people. Based on whether or not you feel like proper immigration policy is in place or not, or proper steps were taken or not, you still shouldn't wish harm and fear and these levels of discomfort and confusion on people.
I want to make sure that I add something here. From what I've read, all of the people that were shipped away from Texas to end up in DC and Martha's Vineyard, they were all legally going through the legal channels.
Yes, they were.
Of applying for asylum.
Yes, they were.
So these weren't even people that broke the rules. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, case in point, these were people that were manipulated and taken advantage of.
Sure.
And displaced in a way that the most basic human morals, right? The golden rule, the do unto others. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, man. Could you imagine these same people getting off of a plane that they thought was headed towards, I guess in their case, a vacation, right?
like maybe going on vacation while the people in your constituency freeze to death because they don't have any power. So you and your family go on vacation and leave the people that voted for you to fend for themselves. But when you got off of that plane, it was not to the destination you thought you were going to, but to a country where you did not know the law, the rules, or speak the language, and had no help. There was no one there to greet you or support you. You were just now stranded in some foreign place with no connections, with no relationships, with no help.
So let me jump in here too. So to your point, these people were put on buses, planes, and then buses, right? They were given these like comical, silly maps of where they were to where they were going, right? They were told that they were going to go to like Boston or wherever, that jobs would be waiting for them, you know, these things. And the crazy part about it is, you know, some of these people had to check in at different offices around the country. This is how
Very short order too.
Right. So in like 2 days or Monday morning, you're going to have to check in and, you know, Washington State, or in, you know, one of the Carolinas, or some destination that you couldn't get to in that amount of time, right? Especially coming to a country where you don't have anything, you don't have a place to stay yet, you know. So it was cruelty of the highest order to the people. But we knew that. Let's talk about for a moment this Republican stunt for what purposes they intended to accomplish, right? And Charlemagne said something. Charlemagne the God. He called it a brilliant move, which that language doesn't feel like the type of language I would use. But I know what he means. He's saying it's brilliant in the way that Hitler was brilliant. You know what I mean? He was a smart dude. He accomplished a lot. He was just evil, right? And this is something that is very difficult to divorce from especially this new GOP. These are not people who are uninformed. These are not people who are not smart. And these are not people who do not know how to play the game. You know, the master of it all was the former president. You know, he's not as smart as he plays himself out to be, but he's not as stupid as we think he is, right? And to get all of this attention on this issue is exactly what they were going for. But I would posit that immigration is not nearly as big of an issue as they make it out to be. That's not to say that it's not a big issue. It's not to say that we need to figure out answers, but they make it into this huge boogeyman. Now, bear in mind, there's a midterm election coming up. Bear in mind that they lost a lot of momentum when Roe v. Wade was overturned. Bear in mind, Biden is making a lot of, covering a lot of, you know, grounds with his student loan forgiveness and this sort of stuff. And so for them to pull this political stunt at the cost of these actual human beings, because they're trying to be strategic and get back some points headed into the midterms. They're playing, you know, the greatest hits, the rural Southern poor white conservative person's greatest hits. You know, they're talking jobs, immigration, this sort of stuff.
Don't take our guns.
Don't take our jobs.
Pro-life.
Right.
Immigration, protect our borders, stuff they don't actually care about.
Sure.
But that they know.
Well, bear in mind,
the hits,
these folks had a president who campaigned on building a wall. These folks had the ability to donate to this man building a wall. These folks, you know, they had 4 years to build a wall. You know, the right company could have knocked it up in 6 months. It's a wall. You know what I mean? And I think that they use that. They probably don't even want a wall. They just use it because it allows them another boogeyman.
I mean, that like they you can said, use the hits, it plays
right. And the most hurtful thing about it is that there is a base that needs this to be true, because their whole the framework of the world is built around this stuff. You know what I mean? Now, you and I, we live in a border state. We live in Arizona, right? Is there crime in Arizona? Sure. You know, is there, does there need to be, you know, immigration reform? Who's to say? I would say perhaps, right? But does the lack of whatever immigration laws that these folks want, does that mean that our reality is like hell on earth every day? Absolutely not. You know, our kids go to school. You know, we're for the most part safe. It's not like we're living in a war zone. And the way that they play this up, it feels like they're scaring people with something that's not really true. You know, again, these are asylum seekers. You know, they come here looking for work. They're promised work. They get on the plane and they go looking for the work, right? And one thing, while I got you, one thing I do want to say is, imagine how this looks for the folks in Martha's Vineyard, the people who, okay, so there's now 50 families here that they're now in our community. They came here under false pretenses and they were looking for work. They were looking for something. So now all these folks get to be the heroes. They get to say, well, listen, all right, well, shoot, come on, let's help you out. And that's what they did. They sent them to Martha's Vineyard because the Obamas have a house there. They sent them to D.C. because, as we mentioned, Kamala Harris's house is in D.C. They're being strategic with this. And I, as much as I would like to think that it backfired, because, you know, the folks that live in Martha's Vineyard, the folks that were on the ground really responded to these families, for the right, for their news outlets, for their, you know, pundits, for their talking points, on and on and on, they're being celebrated. Like, yeah, that's how you show it. That own the libs.
They get the point and say, ha ha.
Right. And so again, they're not doing it to get more votes away from the Democratic liberal voter. You know, they're not trying to get votes away. They're trying to fire up their base. And so, to Charlemagne's point, again, I wouldn't have described it as brilliant, you know, but I kind of see the point that he's making. And it's very sad because, again, there's a human cost here. From what I understand, Republicans have been absolutely unwilling to work with anything that the Democrats put forward. You know, this is something that was said by Mitch McConnell. He says my priority in the Senate is to oppose every piece of legislation from this administration. Wow. That's effectually what he said. I read it recently again. His sole purpose when he walks into the Senate, my job is to stop them from doing anything that they want to do, right? He will find fault with it. He won't, you know, it could be like, okay, this gets us 90% of what we want, but if it gets them 10% of what they want, then the answer is no. It's just, you know, I'm trying to say, so for them to then say, yes, well, you know, immigration is a completely leftist, it's Biden's policy, but, and then most of the people don't even make the connections. It's theater. The thing is, unfortunately, a good amount of people, it's their reality, you know, and
it's, or at least they've convinced themselves of it.
Sure.
It's not actually our immigration policies have zero effect on their daily lives.
Wow. That's what I'm trying to say.
Like zero.
Zero.
Not kinda, not a little bit, none. And that they get so riled up about something that absolutely has zero effect on their lives is kind of the story of that party.
Oh.
that all of the things that they oppose the most have no effect on them personally.
Sure, sure.
And their constituents, unfortunately, that vote for them. And that's the sad part. They've shown that there are millions of people that support their ideology and that support them. They turn out and they vote.
And there's some
against their own best interest.
Sure, sure. But there's something here. Okay. So this is something that we've said a lot. They vote against their own interest. And you know what, to be honest, they think that we vote against our own interest, you know, Black folks in particular, right? So let's say they're just voting with their values and we're voting with our values, which is fair. Hey, look, I believe in hard work. I believe if a guy makes $1 billion, he should be able to keep it, you know, blah, 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 you know, and I believe in guns. The forefathers set it up this way, so this is how I want it. You know what I mean? That could be a belief system, whatever, right?
Conveniently.
But it could be. And if we're going to allow each individual to live their reality, if we were to allow them that, then that would be fair. The problem that I have with that way of thinking and with things that end up manifesting like what we're seeing in this story is that people stoop to levels that by any definition would constitute cruelty. It's like the human component, the human element is not there. You know, there's this
because you're not, though.
What do you mean?
You're a lib or you're a Democrat, you're not a human. And they've dismissed the idea that we as human beings have anything in common. That was my whole point. We no longer have anything in common to them.
Well, we have to. This is my thinking. You know me. I'm always going to be this person. But I feel like we have to care about each other. Okay.
Except they don't.
This is the problem.
Collectively, they don't, though.
This is the problem. And so, like, if it's a matter of a difference of, hey, my beliefs or my values, you know, reflect this, and your values reflect that. I believe that human values should move us to care for each other, right? And you know, we've made a lot about conservatism on this show, that a lot of it really looks like the perpetuating of white supremacist institutions and ideas and disenfranchisement of Black people and the Black vote by a gerrymandering and by a racist policies and so forth and so on, that disproportionately harm Black communities. They might harm all communities, but they disproportionately affect us and oftentimes disproportionately benefit folks that are white. And there's this kind of veil over it that makes it seem American, you know, when the truth is it's really white.
That's what they wrap it in.
Right. And it masterful the way they do it. The thing is, some of us can see right through it. The problem is that now we're talking about them using other human beings for this dog and pony show that's not based in a reality that, as you mentioned, that really affects people in that way. You know, they make a big deal out of welfare. They make a big deal out of all these sort of social policies. But the fact is, as soon as there's a pandemic, guess where we got money for days. As soon as there's a war, we got money for days. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to helping people,
clearly you have money for everyone else.
And when it comes to helping
people, how many billions did we send to Ukraine?
Exactly my point.
But we send nothing to Flint or Mississippi.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
Okay, I said some things earlier that weren't true. He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Be sure to stick around. We got a lot more show left for you. We will be talking about the reverse freedom rides. As it turns out, this whole Martha's Vineyard stunt isn't new. Once upon a time, they used to ship Black people into these communities.
That's such a thing used to exist and clearly still does.
How about that? And we're also going to talk about Bill Maher and some things that he had to say about slavery. So, yeah, I'm going to take some time with that one, definitely. But first and foremost, we like to teach you how to become a better ally, Baba. So we will do that right now. This week's Baba is sponsored by the Black Information Network daily podcast on iHeartRadio, where you can hear discussions and interviews on topics and news stories important to the Black community. Visit bin.news.com. All right. Today's Baba comes via unitedagainstbookbans.org. We want you to say no to book bans. From January 1st to August 31st, 2022, there have been 681 attempts to ban or restrict library resources, and 1,651 unique titles have been targeted. Access to a wide variety of reading materials is critical for student development and well-being, and the right to read is on the ballots across the country this November. Book challenges in 2022 set to exceed 2021 record. Take a stand against book bans and visit uniteagainstbookbans.org to learn more. Access resources and help defend the right for us all to read freely across our nation. And here's another note from our producer, Ms. Maggie, aka Maggie B. Noah.
She do.
There's a clip going around of Tom Hanks, and he's someone who's been very vocal about his lack of access to information, particularly Black history, which is American history in his estimation and our estimation, of course. And he tells a story in brief about, he's like, yo, when I was in school, I learned about Custer's Last Stand, and I learned about, you know, Wounded Knee, and but I never learned about the Tulsa, where is it? It's written here, the Tulsa
Massacre.
That's what I thought. Tulsa Massacre and Black Wall
Street. Demolition and burning down of Black Wall Street.
And this move against CRT, or what they're calling CRT, is attempting to sort of whitewash that. And so if you find that video online, check it out. Again, Tom Hanks talking about the American education system. All right, now let's talk Bill Maher. You're familiar with Bill Maher.
Very.
What are your thoughts on him, the person?
Once upon a time, I would watch Bill Maher weekly. And I'm talking about every week for years, every Friday for years. My mom and I both, even in different cities, we watch, record, recap the show together. Bill presented himself as ally through probably the last 5 or 6 administrations, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And most flamboyantly and most aggressively during Trump's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And in his disdain for what he'd watched the office become, I'd formed a bit of a like symbiotic bond with tuning into his show. If even as a form of therapy, listening to someone else remind me that I wasn't crazy for what, yeah, I was watching happen,
sure,
to our country and to, you know, what used to be our highest office. But in the last few years, and really not just in the last few years, but every now and then, he'll dip his toe into some really, really strange waters. I remember an episode maybe 4 or 5 years ago, presented himself as a house N-word or something to that, something similar to,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I remember that.
And the following week, Ice Cube came on the show to kind of remind him, like, it's not really your place to, you know, I know you're funny and I know you've kind of presented yourself as ally and have endeared yourself with us, but that's not it.
Yeah.
More recently, after Civic Cypher began, he had a guest on that he kind of urged along some similar lines to this, like, essentially, stop complaining about racism, stop complaining about your history in this country, stop complaining about having gone through all these terrible things, right? You don't need affirmative action. You don't need to be anybody's victim kind of thing. And the guest on the show was a black man encouraging us to stop being victims and, you know, essentially pretend all of these things didn't happen in the wake of, you know, Mr. West saying that slavery was a choice and just very, very similar rhetoric to that.
Mm-hmm.
And after that episode, we talked about it on Civic Cypher. That had to be well over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't watched an episode since. This is after watching every week for years, because I saw it right then in that space. Even though he wasn't the one talking, he was far too pleased with what he was hearing. Right? Like, he didn't disagree. He didn't object. He didn't offer any context. He just not only accepted, but seemed to encourage, like, yeah, I know some black people and that is how they feel. And I'm like, whoa, you're speaking on behalf of black people? Even if based on the direct opinion of some black people that you know, you, sir, speaking on behalf of black people, the both of you, your guest and you, sir, the host, that's a bit far from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell, like I said, in his comfort with listening to what this gentleman that was saying and how ridiculous it was, when there were no objections, and not just no objections, but him seeming to be pleased with what he was hearing, I understood something had happened.
Mm.
That he'd either been performing all along and he got us, or that something in his ideology and his beliefs was starting to change.
Mm.
And so when this most recent thing came up, I had to hear about it like the rest of us via social media, instead of previously I would have heard it live.
Yeah.
But I was not even this surprised or shocked, because I already saw it. I already saw him make that left turn, or that right turn, however you want to phrase it. I
see what you did there.
And it was disappointing. But it wasn't shocking or surprising. It's not a corner that he occupies by himself. It's just one that once upon a time it would have seemed he never would have stood on.
So this is what this is where I'm going to paint the picture for you, our listener. So he made a few points in this rant. We are going to spare you the rant, but if you want to figure it out or figure out what he said, you can find it online. There's lots of folks that have lots of opinions on it. You may notice online that a lot of conservative voices have a lot to say about it, because it paints a picture that they would like to call accurate. But for those of you hearing it here first, just bear this in mind if you come across those conservative voices. In fact, I talked about this on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. I had to dedicate a whole episode to it because there was so,
and
it
thank, was and so thank you hurtful. For that, because it was, I think that's
did important. Did you catch that one?
Of course I did.
Oh man. All right. Well, it was such a hurtful thing. Okay. So here's some of the main points that he made in his rant. He talked about slavery, when slavery was taking place. Okay. He says black people own slaves. He says slavery is a human condition. It existed around the world since the beginning of human beings, something like this. It's not necessarily a black or white thing, it's a human thing. Then he goes on to say, you know, Africans sold slaves into Africans sold Africans into slavery, right? So these are the points that he made, right? And to anybody wanting to distance themselves from the legacy of slavery, in other words, what impact did slavery have that can still be felt today, right? And I don't care who you are, if you want to have that conversation with me, I'm ready. Dr. Westenberg is my teacher. I can do that. But yeah, the legacy of slavery anybody that wants to distance themselves from the legacy of the responsibility,
the accountability,
thank you, of slavery. Anybody that looks at black people and says, you know, black people have less money, they're less healthy, they die younger, they're involved in the criminal justice system at disproportionate rates, infant mortality, you know, on and on, you know the list. They live in lower income communities, they pass on less wealth, you know, their
access to, you know, less and less in the way of resources, education,
yeah, on and on, you know the list. For anybody that knows that to be true and then says, well, it's just because black people are just bad people,
bad at being people,
or whatever it is that they say,
because I'm good at being people,
however it is that they say it, those people need what Bill Maher says to be true. Because I think fundamentally, if you think about it, you know that that cannot be true. Black people are the people that created all the people, and some of these things are unique to America. So if you go to Africa, you'll find black people and you'll see that these things are not true in Africa. It's not to say that Africa does not have its own problems, but a point that I
made, as does everywhere in the world, right? Yeah.
But, you know, Africa is known for being poor. How did Africa become synonymous with poverty? Well, it might have something to do with, let's be honest, the use of gunpowder by Europeans. And
I love how eloquently and pleasantly you presented that. It might have something to do with.
Oh, it definitely has something to do with that. But let's take it a step further. Okay. We know gunpowder is invented by the Chinese, right? Procured by Europeans. And then that, coupled with disease, was used to really change the way the world looked and remake the world in such a manner that it benefits largely white people of European descent.
The entire world, by the way.
Sure, folks. Sure. I mean, you can go from India to, you can go anywhere. It doesn't matter. Now, back to Africa. The point I made is that, as we know, Africa is home to the wealth of the world. All the gold, all the diamonds, all the oil, the minerals, the, you know, the land is fertile, you know, cradle of civilization, the most ancient of civilizations, the most advanced of ancient civilizations. How is it that a place that was home to Mansa Musa, to all the pharaohs, my name, the person I'm named after, Ramses, one of the wealthiest people to ever have lived. That's my actual name too. Q said it wasn't. That's on my birth certificate.
I recant it.
Yeah, you did. How is it that Africa is so poor? And then when you go and you look at it, you know, the same thing was true of our native brothers and sisters here. Same is true of, you know, folks in India and, you know, other large British colonies, or otherwise European outposts around the world. These folks were doing fine until some new folks showed up and they brought disease and gunpowder with them, right?
What was the gunpowder for?
For the guns.
And what were the guns for?
To kill the people that didn't sign the deals, or, you know, whatever.
I wanted to make sure we were explicit about that.
So
it was not for trade.
I'm going to get back to Bill Maher, but hear me out. So, you know, you end up doing one bad deal, and it takes a lot of people to really what is the word I'm looking for, colonize is not the right word, but occupy, that's the word. And so doing these deals, you know, this paperwork sort of stuff where the country does a deal with another country with interest rates that can never be repaid, and, you know, you're not allowed to sell finished goods, you can only sell textiles and this sort of thing. These are the deals that have caused Africa to remain poor, and for the foreseeable future will be poor. It largely benefits, you know, white European countries, Obviously disproportionately benefits Africans who live where the resources are. And that's what we call white supremacist institutions, right? So now that you've had that history lesson, allow me to finish with Bill Maher. He talks about people who could afford slaves, affording slaves, including Black people, right? As a way of, again, distancing himself, or this narrative allows the right, or really the country, if I'm honest, the left too, let's be fair, to distance themselves from the problems that Black people still endure to this day. Again, the legacy of slavery. And again, if you don't know what I'm talking about in terms of the legacy of slavery, one great example that you can read that will take you, we'll call it 20 minutes. It's not even a full book. It's called How to Make a Slave. It's written by a guy named Willie Lynch. It's purported to be a work of fiction, but it is still very accurate to the mentality, the brilliance, if you will, and the economics.
Yeah, as a tool of societal, socioeconomic warfare.
Sure, sure.
It's quite brilliant.
Absolutely.
And has stood the test of time.
It worked on us. So
it's still working.
Still working, yeah. And that was the point. So again, the legacy of slavery, I'm not going to develop that because unfortunately we don't have the time to do it. But please, please, please.
Societal, sociological, economic warfare.
If you love me, if you love anybody, if you've ever met a Black person that you can say that you love, please read that to understand the legacy of slavery a little bit better. Again, 20 minutes of your life, it'll change you for the better and it'll change you forever, okay? Now, Black people owning slaves in this country. Let's redefine white supremacy for our listeners. So white supremacy isn't something that only benefits white people. White supremacy or white supremacist institutions or whatever are institutions or societal frameworks that largely benefit white people and are often largely at the expense of non-white people.
Are always at the expense of non-white people.
Sure, sure. Now, sometimes I'm gonna say sometimes, because sometimes there are poor white people that end up in that system. And, you know, we make this argument sometimes on the show, rich versus poor, which is very, very much.
Ironically, I'm so glad you brought that point up, because it's more rich versus poor.
Oftentimes, yeah.
Than Black versus white.
Oftentimes.
Right? But they've, and this is why it's so brilliant. It's been so expertly, I might have made that word up, but ride with me.
Expertly.
It's so expertly executed as a play of Black versus white that you convince the poor white man that the even wealthy Black man is beneath him.
Or otherwise his enemy.
And you keep him subjugated as ally to the rich white man whose thumb he's under.
How about that? So, let me finish. It is possible, now that we've defined what white supremacy looks like, as long as it largely benefits this group and disproportionately affects this other group, that's the makings, we'll call it the makings, because I can't say across the board,
right?
I can't say across the board, but those are the makings of a white supremacist institution, right? So it is possible for Black people to participate in white supremacist institutions.
Yes, it is.
It is possible for Black people to benefit.
I.e. Jason Whitlock, if you ever have time to Google someone Black that benefits from and participates in the practice and institution of white supremacy, there you have it.
Perfect. Now, he talks about slavery around the world and how slavery has existed since people, right? And he's not saying anything that no one doesn't, that we don't know. You know what I mean? This isn't some new revelation. It's not like we're like, oh my gosh, there was slavery before, you know, because he goes on to talk about the Bible, and anyone that grew up in this country knows that there were slaves in the Bible. right? The Bible obviously is a lot older than this country. So there you have it, right? But what he's trying to do is kind of dilute what the word slavery means in this country, and conflate it with slavery, historically speaking, where in this country, the slavery was very, very different. It was pure economics. It was, we're going to take you from your homeland, right? We're going to change your language. We're going to rape you. We're going to beat you. Slaves have been beaten, you know what I mean? But not all of these things together. We're going to chop your foot off if you try to escape. You know, this type of cruelty. We're going to make you wear these chains. We're going to make you wear these masks. We're going to, you know, and we need sound economics.
Chattel slavery, they call it. Most unique to the Americas.
We are going to perform medical experiments on you. Perform medical experiments on you. But the key above all else, above any other type of slavery that I've seen, and this is something that I've looked into, obviously, Dr. Westenberg's student, we were not human beings.
Bought and sold as property.
Not human beings.
Owned into perpetuity.
And our children.
And considered non-human beneath those who owned us.
He goes on to talk about,
not as prisoners of war, as property.
Yeah, we could not work our way out of it. Nothing. That was it. That was our permanent condition. Now, he goes on to make a point about Slavic people. That's where the word slave comes from. Again, this is another point that I made in the Black Information Network daily podcast. Slavic people were white people. That's where the term comes from. And you see how harmful his rhetoric is?
And intentionally harmful.
Oh, Jesus. But anyway, back to what I'm trying to say here. Slavic people, white people. You could show me some white people that endured the type of slavery that was designed to operate in perpetuity for sound economics so that the slaves won't come kill you in your house, right? The type of slavery in the Americas and the Caribbean. Show me some white folks that endured that type of slavery.
You won't find a such example.
My point exactly. And then,
you
of course,
you won't find another example of any other people in history.
That's why it's so dangerous that he gives this to the right, even taking it away from black people. And it's almost like, oh, black people, you're responsible for where your station in life. I was born in 82 into this world, and black people ain't never had no wealth in this country. And it's like, well, it's your own fault. We freed the slaves. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Well,
none of us own slaves, so what's the problem?
We got a lot more to address than just that. You know, there's some deeper implications. There's a deeper legacy there. Read the Willie Lynch letter, as I mentioned. And then, of course, he talks about how Africans sold slaves. Again, we mentioned this before. We know that this is true. I've done the research on this, and the truth is the Africans that sold the slaves did not know where they were going. They thought the same type of slavery that they were practicing in Africa would be the same type of slavery they sold their folks into. So not excusing that, still an awful thing to do, but that's the extent of their crimes in Africa. What happened in the Americas is really what created the legacy that we have to deal with today.
That we still experience today.
It's time for the Way Black History Fact. Sorry I have to move on so quickly, but that's how it goes when the clock is ticking,
you gotta
right?
Do what you gotta do.
So today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media. You can check out more at hiphopweekly.com. We're gonna be talking about reverse freedom rides. To call back to what we talked about earlier in the show, the Martha's Vineyard political stunt by Ron DeSantis and company. This comes via Politico. So I will read. In the spring of 1962, David Harris, a short order cook from Little Rock, Arkansas, arrived in Hyannis, Massachusetts, a small but tony vacation village located on Cape Cod, best known then and now as the location of the Kennedy family's summer compound. Harris, who was black, traveled to Hyannis in search of work with funding and encouragement from Little Rock's White Citizens Council, one of many local organizations comprised of middle-class white professionals who, while dedicated to the preservation of segregation, styled themselves as the respectable, moderate alternative to the Ku Klux Klan. Earlier that year, council members in New Orleans and Little Rock
dreamed up a public relations stunt. They would offer Black Southerners bus fare and relocation costs to undertake, quote, reverse freedom rides to northern cities, where they told their victims good jobs and housing awaited them. The idea was to embarrass and expose the hypocrisy of northern liberals who cheered the real freedom rides, but whom they suspected would blanch at receiving thousands of Black transplants in their own communities. Harris was just the first of roughly 100 Black Southerners whom the council shipped to Hyannis. In this particular case, the Citizens Council had a specific target in mind, Edward M. Kennedy, the president's younger brother, who was campaigning for a seat in the United States Senate. President Kennedy's brother assured you a grand reception to Massachusetts, the council's leadership assured them. Good jobs, housing, etc. are promised. Kennedy, a summer resident of Hyannis, called the segregationist bluff. He organized a reception for Harris, comprised of local residents who extended a warm welcome. The story of reverse freedom rides assumed a new meaning this week when persons seemingly associated with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis promised a group of Venezuelan asylum seekers that good jobs and housing, as well as expedited work permits, awaited them in Boston. The migrants were transported instead without their knowledge to Martha's Vineyard, as we mentioned, in an attempt to surprise and expose the hypocrisy of liberals who oppose the Republican Party's hardline immigration stance. The ploy didn't work out exactly as they planned. Residents of the small island warmly embraced the asylum seekers. Much of the citizens of Hyannis welcomed David Harris some 60 years earlier. The two stories share some similar characteristics. In both cases, elected officials attempted to pin their critics in a corner. In neither case did the play immediately succeed, though today's story has yet to play out. In mid-1961, the Congress of Racial Equality organized a series of freedom rides in which interracial groups rode Greyhound buses through southern states in an effort to test the efficacy of the Supreme Court's ban on segregated families serving interstate travel. The freedom riders famously encountered frequent brutal backlash from local residents and law enforcement officials who deployed terrorism and illegal arrests and imprisonment. The Freedom Rides, still in force a year later, proved a costly embarrassment to Southern elected officials and business leaders who saw the region's violent lawlessness splashed across papers around the world. The Freedom Rides came at a moment when Southern violence generally threatened to become a drag on the region's economic prospects and posed a political conundrum for the administration in Washington, which competed with the Soviet Union for the loyalty of former colonial subjects in Asia and Africa, most of them non-white. When an angry mob held a group of Black worshipers hostage inside the First Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, the columnist Murray Kempton captured popular opinion in the North and beyond when he caustically remarked, quote, "These are proud, brave, and faithful people, and some of them even found time to worry about the wives of pillars of white citizens who were in danger of having to cook their own breakfast in the morning." The white South had a PR problem. Enter George Singleman, a member of the Greater New Orleans Citizens Council and aide to Leander Perez, the city's leading segregationist, a man so extreme in his anti-Black and anti-Semitic prejudices that the local Catholic bishop excommunicated him. Singleman's idea was simple. White liberals in the North, he maintained, were hypocrites and their hypocrisy should be exposed. Safe in their white urban and suburban enclaves, they could look down their noses at Southern segregationists because they didn't have to live, work, and go to school with African Americans. By busing thousands of Black Southerners to Northern community, the Citizens Council could bring the civil rights movement home to the North. Northern whites, he surmised, were no more interested in sharing towns and suburbs with Black people than were Southern whites. It was with this sentiment in mind that the Mississippi House of Representatives passed a non-binding resolution that proposed to redistribute dissatisfied Negro population to other areas where the political leadership constantly clamors for equal rights for all persons without regard to the Constitution, judicial precedent, and rights of the states. That was actually what it said. All right. Throughout the South, citizens' councils as far and wide as Macon, Georgia, and Selma, Alabama, Shreveport, Mississippi, and Jackson, Mississippi, lied with impunity, assuring Black residents that jobs and housing awaited them in their new home states. This was never the case, particularly on Cape Cod, where the off-season unemployment rate normally hovered near 20%.
The irony, of course, was that the White Citizens Council didn't really need to pull a cheap stunt. The North already had a large black population, one that had been growing in leaps and bounds since the start of World War II. To be sure, in the North, black people could vote and build political power. But a complex thicket of discrimination in housing, jobs, credit, banking, and policing, and in the provision of public services such as education and infrastructure, rendered black people as second-class citizens in most northern localities. By the mid-1960s, urban unrest and contests over schools and housing and desegregation would lay bare these inequalities. Singelmann wasn't wrong per se when he observed a certain comfortable hypocrisy on the part of northern liberals. He was just moronic in the way he went about trying to expose it. As was the case 60 years ago, last week, politicians used a group of vulnerable people to change the subject, to shift the political debate anymore to more comfortable ground. And here we have it. Nothing new under the sun. As we mentioned, you know, immigration reform could be something that might help us and help folks that want to, you know, make a life here in this country. But the way they're going about trying to expose it is cruel. It's inhuman, and it's political theater that does not deserve applause. And because they know how to work the system, they're getting all the applause. But that's going to do it for us this week on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You have been listening to, once again, Civic Cypher.
Today's show is produced by our producer, Ms. Maggie, a.k.a. Maggie B. Noen.
She do.
And we want you to check us out. So
subscribe.
Subscribe.
Like, yeah. Comment, share.
Share. All those things.
Please.
Q, I appreciate that. And if you have any questions, any topics you want us to get to, hit civiccypher.com. We ask every week. We'll ask again. Make a donation to the show. You can do so through the website. You can also hit us at Civic Cypher on your favorite money sending app.